Welcome to the Latter Gay Stories Podcast, the show that features real people, real stories, and real talk. This is the intersection of sexuality and reality. Now, here's the voice of the show, Kyle Ashworth.
Thank you for joining us on another episode of Latter Gay Stories Podcast. I'm your host, Kyle Ashworth, and you are at the intersection of sexuality and reality, where it meets at LGBTQ Avenue and LDS Street. We want to thank you for giving us an hour of your time to better understand this intersection and to help us build bigger and stronger bridges between the LDS and LGBTQ community. Today's episode is really great, especially if you're trying to better understand mixed orientation marriages and the lengths we go to find authenticity and honesty in our journey. Today's podcast episode is brought to you by Tanner Jones. And Tanner is one of those individuals who found himself in a mixed orientation marriage. It is familiar territory for me as well. And we're going to discuss what it's like to come out, what the journey is like, having that conversation with not only yourself, your family, but someone that you've married and committed yourself to, and in the Mormon circle, for time and all eternity. So, without further ado, I want to welcome to the podcast, Tanner Jones.
Glad to be here.
Thank you for being vulnerable and open to sharing your story.
Yeah.
It's not always easy, for sure, because when we discuss our personal lives, it's personal.
Yeah.
But at the same time, your story has the ability to influence and help other people. That was a little bit of an introduction. What did I miss? Tell us a little bit about Tanner.
So I grew up with your typical LDS upbringing. My family is, I have relatives that date back to the pioneers that crossed the plains and moved to Utah. And my family is Mormon through and through. And that's kind of been the main thing that shaped my life growing up. And being Mormon is all encompassing. It's who you're friends with, it's what you believe, it's what you do, it's who you associate with, and it's what you envision for the future. And so I always had this image of what my life would be. I would graduate high school, I'd go on a mission, I'd find a wife, I'd have a family, and life would be perfect until the celestial kingdom, and life would be happily ever after, right? And so I knew certain things about me were different growing up. All my friends were girls, and I wasn't interested in the things that other boys were interested in. And I just kind of chalked that up to being a wimp, or I just didn't really feel like I fit in. But I, even as a teenager, it never would have crossed my mind that I was gay. But as I went through puberty, I started to realize that, I didn't have feelings for women, and I had, the opposite, right? I had feelings for guys, and that was a scary thing. But I determined, as soon as it clicked in my mind that I was gay, I was like, doesn't matter, that's gonna go to the grave with me, and I'm gonna make it work.
When you say that you recognized or had feelings, what did that mean to you?
So for a long time, I had noticed that on TV, when I saw these couples, or even in couples at church, I noticed that I would notice the man in the relationship, but I was like, I just want to be like that someday. I want to look like him, or I want to be like him. And then as I started to go through puberty, I started to realize that it was more than just wanting to look like them. It was, I wanted, it was physical attraction. But like I said, I brushed it aside, and I figured that if I had a strong enough belief in God and in the scriptures and in the prophets, that it wouldn't matter.
Did you ever have specific lessons in young men's or anywhere in church that tackled this topic that gave you any hope or even some consternation, this tough feeling about this topic?
I always felt like homosexuality or same-sex attraction was really taboo. It made everybody uncomfortable to talk about. I think people didn't understand it, and so it was just it was always just thrown in with adultery and all those other things, and so I never really felt like that. But I once I was figuring out my feelings, I looked up on LDS.org, everything I could find about being gay, and there was a lot of mixed information. There was a lot of really old talks that talked about how you can become cured through the atonement, and how it was kind of, it was a a curable disease or things of that nature. But then I also found the church's website, Mormon and Gay, and it said that it wasn't a choice, and it let all these people share their stories about how they made it work. And so I felt like there would be a way for me to make it work based off of what I found on LDS.org.
Yeah, and had there been better resources that were more affirming, what do you think your direction would have been?
Definitely different. My experience would have been, I would have felt like I had resources or somewhere to turn. But even because there was such mixed information from the church, I felt more confused inside, and I didn't feel like I could go to a church leader because I didn't know which way a church leader would feel. And I don't feel like I knew enough about what it meant to be gay and Mormon to really come to a conclusion.
So you're a young man just coming through, probably deacon, teacher, priest,
yeah,
period at this point. So how do you move forward knowing the policy and doctrine? And we could even say the philosophies of men mingled with scripture.
Yeah.
Really at this point, because there is such
right.
differing
yeah.
messages
right.
coming from the church. How do you move forward with that?
I decided because there was such mixed information that I was just, it wasn't going to be an important part of my life, and that I would be able to live righteously and find a girl and be able to show her love in enough ways that it would all be fine. And I think in the back of my mind, I thought, if I do all the things I'm supposed to, if I go through the temple, if I get the priesthood and go on a mission, then surely God will let me have at least some kind of physical attraction for a woman. And so in the back of my mind, that was my goal, was to do everything that I was supposed to and show God that I was living worthily so that I could have what everybody else had.
Did you date at all through high school? Just kind of give us a sense of what your high school years were like.
Yeah.
For those who are in your same shoes,
right,
or younger than you, who are kind of navigating this journey as well, what did a typical day at high school or a typical year in high school look like?
There was lots of pressure to... I went on tons of dates. I had a really good Mormon group of friends. We went on double dates every weekend. So I was constantly going on dates with girls, but I'd never felt anything for them. And when I was 16, there was this girl that had shown some interest in me. And I was like, well, I've never had a girlfriend. Like, let's kind of try this out, see how it goes. And it was not good. Like, I didn't enjoy it. Like, I certainly did not like kissing. I didn't like physical affection. And I just kind of chalked that up to embarrassment, or that just wasn't in my personality. You know, I'm not super huge into PDA. I like to kind of fit in with the crowd and not do anything to make myself stand out. And so that's kind of what I blamed it on. And so that was very brief. And then, but that was before I even knew I was gay. Because I didn't know until I was like 16, 17, well into my junior year. And so this was my sophomore year. I was still going on dates. I was thinking in my mind, like, that will come later on. Like, I'm just a teenager. Like, it doesn't matter that I haven't felt anything. I hadn't really felt anything for a guy at that point. So I had no reason to believe anything was wrong, but nothing felt right. And then in my senior year, I started to date my now ex-wife, and same thing. Like, I didn't feel super comfortable with PDA, but it was fun. But at that point, I knew that I was gay, but I had determined not to act on it. And so I was like, I think I can make this work.
I want to go two different directions here, but first, I knew that I was gay. So something happened. Let's talk about what happened.
I honestly don't even remember a moment. I don't remember it clicking in my mind that I was gay. I think that I had started to wonder if I wasn't totally straight because I hadn't felt anything for a girl, because I noticed the male body. But there wasn't like a specific moment where I was like, oh man, like, I'm gay. It just kind of was evolving. I was asking myself questions, and there was not a specific moment. When I look back, I just knew.
And so you begin dating, and I think the way you describe that is really familiar for people in this space, that there seems to be a desire for companionship and a desire to be with someone, yet a disconnect in that relationship.
Yeah.
Did you experience that?
Yeah, definitely. Like, I found myself not wanting to text her back all the time and not wanting to constantly give her my attention because it wasn't mutual, for sure. And but again, like, in my mind, I was just like, maybe it's just her that I don't like, or maybe, you know, because I would have fun when I was with her. It didn't feel right. It didn't sit right with me.
But you begin dating, and I would assume you date until the point where you're ready to serve a mission.
Yeah, so I started dating my ex at the end of senior year. And my senior year is when they changed the age for missionary service, and so I left a month after graduation.
Right at 18.
Yeah.
Did you have any of these discussions with your bishop or stake president?
No, absolutely not.
Because you were ashamed, you weren't fully accepting. Why didn't you?
A little bit of both. I was determined, like I said, to take it to the grave with me. I was like, nobody needs to know this about me. Almost like if nobody knows it, then it's not true. That's kind of how it was in my mind. And I wanted to appear to everybody that I was this perfect, straight Mormon kid. And I think one of my biggest reservations was all of my bishops growing up, we were really good family friends within our stake president. Like, I've lived in the same neighborhood for 15 years. Everybody knows everybody. And I would not be able to say I'm gay out loud.
Knowing what you knew about yourself, was there any feeling of unworthiness? I mean, not that you were acting out or doing anything,
right,
but sometimes there is within kind of the back of your brain this, I didn't try hard enough, this didn't go away, maybe I'm a failure, maybe God doesn't love me. Did you ever feel any of those feelings?
A little bit. I think at that point, I was just trying to live in the moment. It was on my mind, but at the same time, it wasn't. Like, I was so involved in being a missionary, and missionary life is so crazy busy that it just wasn't something that I thought about that much. There was definitely feelings. I was surrounded by guys, and so I've of course noticed my attraction for them, but at the same time, like, I was there doing the Lord's work, and, you know, I didn't let it really affect me.
Where did you serve?
I served in Alberta, Canada.
English speaking?
Mm-hmm.
Did you ever run into missionaries that you also thought might be gay, or even teach investigators?
Yeah, I had one investigator that was openly gay, and that was kind of a really interesting situation, because they're sharing these concerns about how it doesn't make sense and how, you know, why would God let me feel this way? And I didn't have the answers for that.
Yeah, I'm curious, like, what answers do you give them? Like, how does one closeted gay missionary teach?
We just kind
someone
of
open.
Defaulted to, you know, we don't know all things. We just know that God loves his children and he has a plan for each and every one of us. And I felt comfortable saying, you know, that the church no longer teaches that it's a choice, that it's curable, you know, it's you are who you are, but basically you can't be if you want to be an active member. But there were missionaries that I thought were gay, and I was in group settings where that was talked about, and that just kind of gave me more resolve to act as straight as I could, because I never wanted anybody to think that I was gay.
And to be treated the way that in secret they were treating
right
those other elders.
Yeah, and the only time I was ever asked my whole life if I was gay was on my mission. I was street contacting with this guy. He had left the church and come back. He was from New York, like super progressive, able to notice even subtle things that most people wouldn't, you know, maybe pick up on. And he was like, Elder Jones, are you gay? And I would like, I almost had a heart attack. I was like, no. And he asked me, like, what I liked about girls, and just, like he knew, but I just was like, no, like, I like girls. I have a girlfriend. Like, how could I be gay if I have a girlfriend, you know?
And maybe in the back of your mind, you're trying to recount all of your steps and figure out where you made a mistake.
Like, where I went wrong.
Where you went wrong. At what point, I mean, what did I do that would throw triggers?
Yeah, and that just, again, strengthened my resolve to, I mean, I was pretty normal kid. Like, I didn't do anything, you know, typically that's or stereotypically gay, but I mean, he noticed something in me, I guess. So
interesting.
Yeah.
So you you complete your mission, come home honorably, and get off the airplane, and there she is.
No, she was on her mission still.
Okay.
So, yeah, so I got home, and it kind of all came, like, I felt like, you know, once I finished my mission, like, even though I knew the church didn't teach it was going to go away, I still hope, like, maybe they're just saying that for, like, you know.
The ones that didn't go away.
Right. Or even, like, to look good in the eyes of the public, you know, to try and seem progressive, or not that that's progressive, but, I don't know, I just hoped that maybe I would be an exception. And I got home and started going to singles ward, and it was still very much there. And so that's when I started to build serious resentment towards God. Like, how could he let me feel this way after all that I've done for him? I just sacrificed 2 years of my life for him. And, like, why can't I just be like everybody else, you know?
Those feelings are real.
Yeah.
And I know that those who are listening to this podcast episode on this side of the aisle, on our side of the aisle, recognize those. That's really difficult. How would you explain that to someone who isn't on the spectrum? How would you best describe what those feelings are like?
I'd say partially, like, some of me felt broken, or that it was an imperfection. Like, it was something wrong with me. Because everyone else, you know, everybody has their trials and their temptations, but not ones that get in the way of them having an eternal family. You know, the family is the core unit of the church, and most people's trials and temptations don't stop them, at least in the way that it does for gay people. And because we have the opposite inclination of, you know, against what the church teaches. And so I felt for sure damaged that there was something wrong with me, that maybe even a punishment, like something that I had done. Was I not, you know, maybe in the pre-earth life I had done something that caused me to have these feelings, or I don't know.
I think that's a great answer. And I think that sometimes we get caught in this space too, because a well-intended Latter-day Saint will say, but that's what the atonement is for.
Right.
And, but in one circumstance, in one space, they say, you're not broken, you're just fine the way you are. And then the best answer when you hear the story is, well, that's what the atonement is for, that the atonement will fix it, and that this will change in the next life, so just have hope for that. And all those things are inconsistent with doctrine and policy,
right?
Yet that's the message that we get from Mormonism, traditionally and culturally, and at its very root, at 50 North Temple. So she's still on the mission, and you're navigating this journey. What are you doing to move forward?
I was, even though I was struggling a lot internally, I was also growing really close with my parents at this point, because I was an adult, so I was having lots of good conversation with them about life in general. And for a brief moment, I considered coming out to them, because a lot of people on Instagram and Facebook were coming out, and it seemed like it was going okay for them. And so I was like, maybe, you know, maybe I'd be okay. But at the same time, like, I was struggling with my belief in the church and wanting my eternal family. And I knew that if I came out, I was never going to be able to marry a woman. And so I was like, I quickly decided not to, and just kind of continued to struggle internally and kind of build myself up for when my ex got home. And
you said that you wanted, or even a brief moment, thought you could come out to your parents. What were the things, who was on your left shoulder and who was on your right shoulder giving you the pros and cons?
What
were the pros to coming out to your parents in that moment?
In that moment, I felt like I had never trusted my parents more. At no point did I think that my parents wouldn't love me or that they wouldn't accept me. That was never on my mind. I just felt really like I could be vulnerable and that everything would be okay. And that was what, because I was feeling really burdened and I just, like, really heavy. And I knew that that was the reason why, is because I was harboring this deep secret. But then the cons certainly outweighed the pros. Like, I didn't want anybody to know, and I didn't want my chances of an eternal family being ruined. And I wanted to be the perfect Mormon kid. Like, that was really, really important to me.
I think that's solid advice, because I do know there are parents who listen to episodes like this wondering what they could have done differently.
Right.
To save their children from years and years of agony. Right. and shame. And I think that's an honest answer. Like,
yeah.
Sometimes it's not anything that the parents do or do not do.
Right.
But it's also that personal fear of what will others think of us, yeah, or think of me. And your answer is very real. That's a very real part of this conversation. So you keep it from your parents, continue to bottle it up inside, mm-hmm, or in great Mormon vernacular, you turn it off, mm-hmm, like a light switch.
Yeah.
Throw it in a box, crush it.
Yeah.
But yet, down the road, probably not in the not too distant future, your girlfriend, mm-hmm, is ready to come home.
Yeah. And
have you been riding back and forth?
Up until like 3 or 4 months before she got home, I was kind of getting more distant because I was dealing with a lot. And so she wrote me off and said she wanted to focus on her mission. And
Is that called a Dear Jane?
Yeah.
Is that what it is?
Yeah.
And I rarely hear this situation, so it's always the Dear John letter. But so yeah, you got a Dear Jane.
I did, yeah.
Okay.
And I was like, I mean, part of it was mad. I was like, what is she thinking? Like, we're going to be perfect together, like, when she gets home. But then part of it was like, maybe this is good. Like, maybe this will help me be able to continue to discover who I am and what will be best. But then she got home and her mom had messaged me and was like, please come to the airport. Like, you know, she'll want to see you. And I was like, no way. Like, she wrote me off. So I went to her homecoming talk. And then a few days later, we kind of picked up where we left off. And yeah, we moved very quickly.
So let's just give us a kind of an understanding of what it was like to date and that process to engagement.
It was interesting. I had a really good group of friends in my YSA ward, and she just kind of joined that. And so we went on dates, but most of the time we spent together was in this group setting. And that was nice for me because there was no pressure to show her PDA and I didn't have to focus on her. I didn't have to continually tell her how I felt. We were just kind of spending time together, and then we'd drive home and whatever, and we were building that relationship. But I went into picking things up with her with the intentions of engagement and marriage, and that's what we did. We started talking about marriage pretty immediately, within like a week or two. And then we chose our temple date within a few weeks, and we got officially engaged after 2 or 3 months of her being home, and then we were married 3 months later. And there was a lot of struggle as we spent time alone. I felt it hard to try and make conversation with her, because I think part of me felt guilty, but at the same time, like, I didn't feel that guilty, because in my mind I was doing what God wanted me to do. I was building my eternal family. I was being a worthy priesthood holder. Like, I was doing the things that I was supposed to do, and so how could that be bad? But I recognized that this was a really big thing that I wasn't being upfront about, and so there was a lot of internal struggles, but nothing to the point where I considered telling her or like breaking off the engagement or anything.
Yeah, prior to your day, you know, the great Mormon message was a mission, marriage, and children.
Yeah.
Make this go away.
Yeah.
And so clearly the mission didn't make it go away. Mm-hmm. Marriage is the next step. And right, even though that might be difficult, you're just 2/3 of the way in.
Yeah.
You have
right,
one more big step. Yeah. And I think what you're talking about, especially in terms of the disconnect, is real. Mm-hmm. And that's something that is a story shared by so many.
Yeah.
And the best way for me to describe it in my own personal experience was like, I was a fish, she was a bird. And I was on the land where she was at, and I was suffocating on the shore, but I needed to get back into the water at some point. But I was still alive, and I was still there, just an enormous disconnect between yeah, who and what we each and individually were.
Yeah.
And that was tough. That was tough right, space to be in. Because as much as I wanted to be on shore And sometimes as much as I wanted to be a bird, I had gills and she had lungs. Yeah. And we just were not created the same.
Yeah.
So as you has no desire to come out to her.
Yeah.
And as you're navigating marriage, let's just talk about those difficult parts and but also the good parts. Like, I'm sure there were probably some good aspects of marriage.
For sure. Like, we, you know, in the process of being engaged, we looked for a house and we found a house to rent and we started to look at furniture and just like, it's exciting. You know, you're building this future that you'd always dreamed of. And even though it wasn't the future that I knew would leave me 100% fulfilled in my life, I knew it was one that I always wanted. And in my mind, like, I was going to make the best of it. And I was going to be able to show her enough love that she would never even know. And I don't know, like, I just, there was lots of good times. We made really good friends in our ward. It was a pretty young ward, lots of young couples. And it was just fun. I mean, there was a lot of struggles too. Like, right from the beginning, she started to feel, you know, inadequate. And like, I wasn't fully there, which I, in my mind, I was like, that happens in every relationship. There's feelings of doubt and insecurity. And so I just kind of played that off. But I knew what the reason was that I wasn't fully there, because even though I can show her love in so many different ways, like, if I can't fully be there, like, if I, that's a big part of me, you know, to physical and sexual attraction is a big deal in a relationship. And I could try and say the right words and do the right things, but you can still, she could still feel that my heart was not totally in it.
And what does that do to her own, I mean, clearly that hurts your own self-esteem.
Yeah.
And you, and the, that personal experience for you, and that starts impacting her, granted. And so that starts to wear away at the relationship.
Yeah.
At any point, did you say to yourself, if I just come out and tell her the truth, this could get better?
No. Because that would, in my mind, like, coming out meant divorce. And so it never crossed my mind. And I, yeah, there was things that were hard, and it just kind of, like, when she would bring up those things about how she was feeling, I was just like, okay, that's what I need to do better. I need to show more time, you know, cuddling her, or I need to slap her butt, or I need to do things that make her feel like I am totally there, and things that I wouldn't naturally want to do, but things that, because I did love her, I wanted to show her love. And so those things that I didn't necessarily want to do, in my mind, that was like an act of service or an act of love, even though it wasn't like real love.
Did you bring children into the marriage?
Yeah. So we had kind of said from the beginning that we were going to spend the first year of our marriage traveling and having fun. And then after that, we would get pregnant. And that's what we did. So we had a really good first year of our marriage. We went on tons of vacations and just had a lot of fun. And then we got pregnant a year into our marriage. My oldest daughter, she was born. Yeah, we'd been married for 18 months. And then 2 years later, we had our other girl.
And at any point in that relationship, even after your children, this is just a common question, so I wanted to throw it in. Did you convince yourself that perhaps I'm not completely gay, I'm just bisexual, I'm kind of middle ground, or the whole time did you just bury the secret and you were confident?
I was confident. I knew that even though I love my wife, I had no physical, and she's a gorgeous woman, so I had no reason not to be physically attracted to her, but I had no physical feelings for her.
All right, well, let's get to the point where you finally have to start making hard decisions. What led up to that? Let's just walk us through the story and tell us your experience.
So there's a bunch of things that kind of went into it. It started with TikTok. I downloaded TikTok at the end of 2019, beginning of 2020, and the algorithm on TikTok put me on the gay side of TikTok, and I was seeing these gay families and these gay relationships where there was just bliss and happiness, and I started to recognize, like, if I never come out, like, I'm never going to have that. I will have, you know, this happy life that I have where there's moments of good and moments of bad, but I would never have this fulfilling head over heels in love, you know, the my other half, my person. I would never have that in my life. And so, because I had never been open to the idea of having a boyfriend or having a husband and having a family like that. It wasn't gross. Like I would see that on the street or whatever, and I'd think like, oh, like that's great for them, but I could never do that. Like that's way too crazy for me. But as I saw these happy people on TikTok, I was like, you know, maybe I could be happy with a man, if in another life, like if things were different, if I hadn't have gone down this road. And then as time went on, I started to recognize some inner depression and anxiety that I was feeling with just a secret and feeling like I was never going to be good enough because the feelings of inadequacy and struggles in my marriage were not going away. They were getting stronger and leading to more issues. It was never like crazy fighting or anything like that, but definitely unhappiness in our marriage. And I started to realize how it was affecting her and how like seeing the love that these people had on TikTok, I was like, frankly, like she deserves that too. And she's never going to have that with me either. And by this point, I had pretty much let go of the idea that Mormonism was absolute truth. I thought it was good, you know, in some aspects, but I didn't believe that it was the absolute word of God. There was too many flaws for me. And so that was a big part of it because I didn't believe the church was true. I saw these other people living a life that I could be and thinking that I could be happy. I recognized my wife was not going to be as happy as she could be if I stay like this. And I knew something had to change.
As you looked at all those things that you were deconstructing, your own personal sexuality, your family structure, historicity, or the tenets of the church, was there any other ever any feelings of blame? Like I did this, kind of like you discussed with your mission. Like I just gave you 2 years, and you gave me nothing in return in terms of converting my sexuality or changing who I am. Did you feel like if it wasn't for the church, I wouldn't have moved forward, created this family, created what we'd even call collateral damage? Now you have two children and a wife, and the difficult part about Mormonism is the celestial nature of it. Mm-hmm. Like when you're in a temple marriage, you're in, and your expectation is to stay.
Yeah,
kind of walk us down that path.
Yeah, so I was dealing with a lot, and I felt like, you know, if I walk away from these things, like I'm walking away from the church and my whole, I felt like a lot of my life I tried to replace my sexual identity with my Mormon identity, and so I felt like that was my whole world. And so as that started to come crashing down, I did blame the church for sure. Especially once I didn't believe it was true anymore. I was like, all these issues that I'm having are because of the church. And I didn't hate the church. I was still actively serving in callings and paying my tithing. And I found a lot of satisfaction from what other people thought of me. And that was the good Mormon kid that was at church every week with my young family. And I blamed God for sure. I questioned the existence and blamed the church for sure.
That makes sense. Okay, so you're deconstructing a lot of things, but we still haven't got to the coming out yet.
Yeah, so this is near the beginning of the pandemic last year. We decided to go on a family vacation to California. There's a bunch of big Airbnbs by Disneyland that were super cheap, and so we decided we were just going to go and stay in an Airbnb. Even though everything was closed, we couldn't do anything. We were just going to kind of get out of town and have fun. And I don't even know what happened there. We had gone to this really secluded beach, and things weren't going well with my wife. I felt like we were at each other's throats, and I was like, this girl is not happy. Like, she deserves better, and so do I. I felt like I deserve better as well. And so we came back to the house, and I was taking a shower, and I just like had a breakdown in the shower. And I was like, I can't keep doing this. And so I got out of the shower, and I texted my cousin, and I said, when I get back to Arizona, we need to talk. I knew that I had to text her right then and there, or I was going to chicken out of it. I was going to just, you know, justify my feelings and just like let it blow over. And so we got back and I met with my cousin. We went on a drive, we pulled up to this park, and I just sat there and I cried for like 3 or 4 minutes before I could even like say anything. My cousin was like, "What the heck is going on?" Like, and I just said it. I was like, "Katie, I'm gay. And I've never felt a weight lift off of my shoulders like that." And part of me was like, I'm going to tell her and it's not going to feel right. But I knew I could trust her that she would never tell anybody. And so I was like, I'm going to tell her it's not going to feel right. And then I'm just going to go back on with my normal life. But I told her and everything, it felt so right. And I was, I mean, she comforted me and she was like, everything's going to be okay. You know, you have to be true to who you are and you have to live your truth. And so we had a really good conversation and I felt really good. And then it kind of started to hit me what that would mean, that that was going to mean I'm going to have to tell my wife, we're going to get divorced, we're going to have to deal with custody and, you know, all these issues that come with divorce that are not going to be fun. And so before I talked to her, I knew I wanted to talk to another family member. So I reached out to my aunt. She's a lawyer and she's super pro-gay rights. Like, she went to college in San Francisco. All of her best friends are gay and she's never been Mormon. And so I knew she'd be so supportive. And so I talked to her. She had always suspected that I was gay. And so that's what she figured I was coming to talk to her about. And we had a really good conversation and I asked her, you know, what happens next? What are my legal options? Like, what's going to happen here? And I felt really good after leaving there that I was going to be okay. Cause if I didn't feel like I was going to be able to be a part of my kid's life, I would have suffered until I died. Because being a dad is the most important thing in the world to me. And I didn't want to put that in jeopardy in any way, shape or form. And so that's kind of what led me up to coming out to them. And then, do we just keep going?
Yeah, great. Okay. Like, I'm just captive. I'm just interested. So
my daughter is like my younger daughter is like 2 months old at this point. We're planning to bless her at the beginning of July. And I think this is mid-June at this point.
And this is still COVID.
Yeah. Yeah. So we were going to bless her in my home. Which
just
is
months ago.
Just, yeah. 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 This is less than a year ago. last summer. So I had said, I want this one last sense of normalcy. My brother was about to open his mission call. He was going to get the priesthood, and then we were going to do the baby blessing all around the same time. So I was like, I want these last few things with my family, this last sense of normalcy, and then I'll tell my wife, then I'll tell my family, and we'll just kind of see what happens after that. And we were going up on another vacation to get away. We like to go up to a cabin up in Heber. And we were up there, it was a 7-day trip, and this was on like day 2 or 3 of this week-long adventure. And my wife was texting me that she was, like, we were in separate rooms, I was out playing games, and I think she was feeding the baby or something, and she was just kind of giving me bullet points of things she felt like we weren't vibing on, that she felt like I didn't prioritize her, that I didn't love her fully, that I wasn't there for her, I didn't care about her. And my heart just sank because I knew that I couldn't go in there and tell her that everything was fine, I do love you fully, I'm 100% here, you know, let's work this out, when 2 weeks later I was going to shatter her entire world. And so I texted my cousin, I said, I'm gonna do it. And then I put my phone down and I went in there. I sat on the bed, kind of same thing. I couldn't get a word out for a few minutes. And I just said, babe, I'm gay. And she didn't respond for a minute. It was, I think she, I mean, obviously she needed a lot of time to process what that meant, but initially she was so loving. Like, she came over and was like rubbing my back and was, I was telling her the things that I struggled with, and I was not making eye contact with her. And she's like, look at me, like, look at me as you're telling me these things. Cause she loved me and she felt awful that I had, you know, had these awful experiences and this inner turmoil that I'd had my whole life. And, So I did that. I was in the room with her for maybe 15, 20 minutes, and I knew at that point that I needed to go tell my parents. So I went upstairs and sat on the bed and told my mom and dad. It was just thinking about this is like, it's so crazy and terrible, terrible timing. In the middle of our family vacation, I had all my siblings there, several cousins there, like just not good. But I wasn't fully forthcoming. I was like, because I knew at that point I wanted the best course forward was going to be to get divorced. I was leaving the church because I had had 10 years to process my truth, right? And but this was their first day of ever hearing this, and so I was trying to kind of lay it easy on them. And so they kept asking, like, well, what does that mean? Like, where do we go from here? And I was just kind of like, I don't know. I kind of hemmed and hawed, and I was just like, I tried to turn it all on my wife. I was like, for her, like, she needs and deserves somebody that can love her, and that's why I'm doing this. And that was why I was doing it, but also it was for me to live my truth as well. And we sat there on my bed with my mom and my dad, and we were just sobbing. They didn't really understand what that meant or why, you know, what was going on. But the most memorable thing of that night was I was sitting there crying, and my dad walked up to me. Because when I'm dealing with confrontation, I don't make eye contact. I was just kind of trying to just get everything out, and he grabbed my face and made me look at him as he was crying, and he said, "Nothing about this changes the way that we feel about you, and we will always love you." And at that point, I knew that everything was going to be okay. And it was a rough road. A lot of crazy things happened over the next couple weeks. But
in those two moments with your then wife and your parents, how close to unconditional love was that?
The closest I've ever experienced. And then in the coming weeks and months where I had really raw conversations with both my wife and my parents, it became clear that even though they didn't necessarily agree with the direction I was going to take my life in, that they still loved me and that nothing could ever change that.
So what were now you said things got hectic and crazy. What were the next steps? Because full disclosure typically in this space means like, just like when you came out to your cousin, like a just great weight has been lifted off your shoulder. Sometimes people in our situation go through what I call the second honeymoon phase, where you have a little chance to breathe and then things get somewhat normal for a couple months and you think, okay, maybe now this is all on the table. Maybe we can make this work.
I never felt that way. Certain people did feel that way in my circle of family. They felt like I should make it work. So the next 4 days, I thought for sure after this, me and my wife would leave the vacation and go home, but she wanted to stay. It was really difficult because she would randomly burst into tears and have to run into the bedroom, and my mom was crying the whole time, but we didn't tell my siblings or my cousins at that point. So we were just kind of on edge, and we were having these conversations at night, and it was just crazy. And in hindsight, it ended up working out because we were on vacation. We didn't have to deal with the everyday stress of work. And, you know, it was just, we were away. And so it was easy to kind of be pretty casual about everything. But we came home and everything everyone was saying was like, you've never even told the church leader about this. Like, let's have you talk to somebody and see, you know, what they recommend. And so our old bishop, who I served as ward clerk under him. And so I was in all the meetings with him, I grew really close with him, and he was now in the stake presidency, and so we decided to have him come over and talk to us. I think the day or the day after we got, I think it was the day we got home from vacation. And that was really difficult because that was the first person that was not family that I had to tell. And he has a brother-in-law that was gay, and so he kind of understood what I had gone through, but of course his thing was, this is so fresh, like, you guys need to try and work it out. You need time to process your emotions. You know, a lot of people make this work that he's worked with in his position, and I appreciated that, and there are people that make it work, but I knew that was not going to work for me. So after that, we met with our bishop the next 2 or 3 days later, and kind of same thing, like I was rushing into this. I wasn't thinking clearly. I needed time to process everything, and I get where they were coming from because this is brand new news to them. But for me, it was like, I've been working on this for 10 years and I'm finally ready to be real and authentic. And over the next 2 days, we went around telling all of our family members because we have lots of family close by. And I did end up still blessing our baby that next Sunday. There was some controversy there. People didn't think that I should be able to do that, even though I was worthy. They were like, if you don't believe, you know, why?
People within your family?
Mostly her family.
Her family.
Yeah. But we went and talked to my bishop, and he was like, if you're worthy, you can do it. In my mind, I would have given the blessing anyway and still not believed. Just everybody wouldn't have known that I was gay if things hadn't gone the way that they had. And so I still wanted that special moment with my baby, because even though I didn't believe that God was speaking through me, I still felt like it was a special opportunity to give her a blessing.
Yeah, and it was a gesture from her father.
Right.
Yeah.
So that happened, and then like the next day, my mom got a call from somebody in our stake and was like, hey, I heard this rumor. Is this true? And my mom has known for like less than a week at this point. And it turned out my sister, who is bisexual and out of the church, she had told somebody, like, my brother's coming out, like, it's so exciting. But her parents were in my ward, and they told somebody, and so...
The great Mormon grapevine.
Yeah. So yeah. Within a week of me coming out to my family, I had these people that were already hearing about it. And I own a pest control business, and most of my customers are in the stake. And I didn't want... You know, as things go through the grapevine, things are going to get misinterpreted. I didn't want people thinking that I hated the church or that I was abandoning my wife or anything. And so I was like, I have to get ahead of this and post on Facebook. And so within like a week and a half of me coming out, I came out on Facebook and just kind of let the world know. And which is crazy because a month before that, I hadn't told a single person. And I remember seeing people's Facebook posts and thinking like, well, that would be awesome. But never in a million years. And there I was like a month later and the whole world knew my secret.
Never in a million years? Or how about 7 days?
Yeah. It happened so fast, but I'm grateful because I didn't give me room to try and stop anything to change my mind. I knew that this was what I needed to do.
Discussions of divorce, how did that come about? And emotionally, how were each of you doing?
It was tough. I mean, I had brought up in my initial conversation with my wife, I had brought up divorce. That's how I thought the best way forward would be for both of us. And, a lot of people were thinking it was too fast. Like, you just barely told her a week ago and now you're sure that you're going to get divorced. Like, you need more time. But I was confident that that's what I wanted, and needed. And that's what she needed as well. 'Cause I wanted her to be able to find someone that could love her fully as well. And I knew that the only way that that was going to happen was divorcing. It ended up, you know, we met with a mediator. We didn't need lawyers or anything, and it worked out.
So as you now, I mean, you've deconstructed faith, you've deconstructed who and what you are, you've deconstructed your marriage.
Yeah.
And as all these things are kind of, in one aspect, you can look at it and say they're crumbling. In another aspect, you can look at it and say they're flourishing,
right,
and things are finally blooming.
Right.
What is it that you're doing to move forward now, and where are you finding happiness and authenticity?
Right. So that was the biggest thing. I felt like for the first time in my whole life, I was being authentic, and I was living authentically. It was really tough. My ex started to go to school pretty soon after we separated, and that meant I had the girls every afternoon, and I mean, we tried to work out a 50-50 schedule, but I didn't have any time to date or do anything. I mean, I guess to answer your question, I found my happiness in my girls. And the time that I had with them, I was able to focus on my relationship as a father. And even in my, because I after like a week or so, I moved out and moved back into my parents' house. And so I was able to kind of rekindle my relationship with my younger siblings who still lived at home. And when I had the girls over there for my time, like I was able to just spend really good quality time with them, and I just felt like my life was really good, and that's where I found my happiness, and that's where I'll always find my happiness. But as I've entered the dating scene and started to date guys, it's been super validating. I've recognized that the parts of me that I was conditioned to believe were broken or that were morally wrong are actually beautiful, and that this is a beautiful part of me that will help me when I'm looking for fulfillment in my life. And as I someday find a husband who I love and who I can raise my girls with and have a family with, like, that's going to be my ultimate happiness. That's my goal, and it's now possible because I'm living true to who I am.
I like that, because not only is it goal-oriented and the ability to look forward to the future, it's honest and true.
Right.
For so many of us who have a Latter-day Saint background, we're so familiar with those phrases that there is no happiness, no spiritual experiences, mm-hmm. No progress on this right. side of the aisle.
Yeah.
And your experience is different?
Right. Yeah, that's... I had a couple family members tell me, you know, you might experience happiness or moments of lust or feeling like you're in love, but you're never going to experience full joy, because true joy only exists in the bounds of the church. And that's just not true. You know, people can have true happiness and joy in any aspect of their life, including finding love the only way that they know how and the only way that they're physically capable of.
And I would assume that if there is a loving God, the 16 million members that make up the church, as opposed to the 7 billion people who yeah. are on this earth,
yeah, can experience a little bit of joy sometimes.
Don't have claim to all happiness and spiritual experiences in this world.
Yeah.
I get it. What didn't we talk about that you wanted to bring up? Is there anything that we didn't cover?
Just, I've been asked several times since coming out, like, do you wish you did anything different, or, you know, is there a right time to come out? And my answer is no. I wish that me on my journey didn't have to drag my wife along with me, because now she's a single mom of two girls, and she'll be fine. Like, she's young and she's beautiful. She'll definitely find someone that can love her the way that she should be loved. But, she didn't ask to be brought on that journey, and that was not fair for me to bring her on that journey, and I recognize that. Would I change anything? Not necessarily, because I'm who I am today because of my journey, and I have my two girls that mean the world to me. And so my answer to the question of is there a right time to come out, I'd say no. I think you don't want to come out before you're ready. I think you need to make sure that you're ready for the consequences of you coming out, because it's difficult, and there's a lot of life changes that come with it, whether you choose to stay in the church or whether you choose to stay married. It's going to be a part of your life forever. It's never going to go away. But that's a beautiful thing, because it's this part of you that now, even though you've always known it, now everybody else can know it too. And so I think come out when you're ready, make sure that you're ready in a good place, and everything will be okay. Everything will work out as it should, and everything happens for a reason, and life will be good.
That's sage advice. That's great advice for someone so new to this world.
Yeah.
The philosophies of men again.
Yeah.
Tanner, thank you.
Yeah.
So we have this both in an audio and visual, audio and video version of the podcast. If someone has a question for you, you okay with them reaching out?
Yeah, definitely.
And have that conversation with. It's interesting who could come out of the woodwork. People who are in this journey as closeted and closed as right. ever, but also parents. I think your message is also a great message to parents yeah. who may recognize something in their children or who have yet to have a child that comes out.
Right.
And even church leaders. I think there's plenty in this discussion that
definitely
is smart for church leaders to grasp onto as they minister to people yeah. in their wards and stakes and branches, that mm-hmm. they can do a little bit better job at recognizing the blind spots.
For sure.
And understanding what inclusion really is
yeah.
Within the church. Again, thank you.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Appreciate it. The Latter-day Stories podcast is your opportunity to better understand the intersection of sexuality and reality, where it meets at these two streets, LGBTQ Avenue and LDS Street. It's podcast episodes just like this that help us to build bigger and stronger bridges between the LGBT and LDS communities. It's podcast episodes like this that help us to do better when we know better. If you have a question for Tanner or want to make a comment about this episode and you are watching on the video version, we invite you to share that below on our Facebook and YouTube channels. If you would like to as well help us to share this message, we invite you to subscribe to the channel and also make a comment and specifically share this podcast episode if it meant something. If you are listening on our audio version, we invite you to subscribe to the channel as well. We are on all of the major players, iHeartRadio, Google, Apple Podcast, Stitcher, and others. And we invite you to subscribe to the channel and give us a rating. The Latter Gay Stories podcast, again, this chance to learn, understand, and do better in this space. It's stories like Tanner's and yours that help us to continue writing more Latter Gay Stories.
This episode is a production of Latter Gay Stories. We are always looking for new friends. Give us a like on Facebook and follow us on Instagram at Latter Gay Stories. The podcast is made possible because of generous donors like you. Make a donation now. Your donation gives us the ability to build bigger bridges by producing more Latter Gay Stories. Want more? Find this episode and others online at LatterGayStories.org.